Hey there, Fish and Frank here. No music today, but we're going to make up for it with some whimsical something. I don't know. But we don't have music, but we'll get
just
music
jump right
on the
into
next
it.
One. you know, a lot of days just keep getting weirder and weirder and weirder.
Oh, you think?
I don't really understand where the whole world's going at this point, but one bright spot on the whole horizon, DeSoto County.
Which part?
I got to tell you, DeSoto County's pretty amazing. They're what, a gun sanctuary now?
Gun sanctuary, yep.
So which, your guns are safe in DeSoto County.
Yeah, that's really pretty impressive.
I just thought that's awesome.
A huge stand.
Yeah.
You know, against
all the sanctuary cities and everything else. If you're going to make sure something's got sanctuary status, gun ownership.
Yeah.
You know, I'm for that.
Absolutely.
And I got guns and all that stuff. And we're going to be talking more and more about DeSoto County. Kind of a cool place. And snook season will be open in DeSoto County, not in Charlotte, Lee, or Sarasota. But DeSoto County, when they made the emergency closures and all the, we're going to stop and ban this and not be able to fish for that, they forgot DeSoto was there.
Yeah.
And it's a gorgeous little county with awesome people. And right now you're allowed to keep redfish in DeSoto County. And when snook season opens in March, you're allowed to keep snook. So one thing about being quiet and out of sight, they can make their own cool laws, like this is a gun sanctuary county, and it's a...
They can get overlooked by the game and fish.
Yeah, they can get overlooked by the state going, oh, well, DeSoto County. And the truth of the matter is, they would have had a hard time doing that because while there was no red tide in Charlotte Harbor, a lot of red tide on the intercoastal. But if there was none in Charlotte Harbor, there was absolutely none in DeSoto, so they can't say their populations were affected.
Right, exactly. You know, so they got a great wintertime fishery up there. You just got to know how to navigate it.
Yeah, if you go on fishandfranks.com, we've got a thing for the 760 boat ramp, and it's about 15 minutes out of town. But keeping in mind, you cannot run your boat from Charlotte County to DeSoto, catch a snook, and come back by boat.
Right. You have to trailer your boat up to there.
Yeah. Once they remembered, oh, wait a minute, you can keep snook in DeSoto, they, under normal circumstances, the law says, like, when something's closed in state waters but open in federal, you can go out in federal waters, catch it, and as long as you don't stop coming through state waters until you land the boat, it's legal.
Legal, right.
Which should be the case going from Charlotte County up to DeSoto, catching a snook, and coming back. But they closed that loophole. It took them about 2 weeks to figure out that, hey, we're in Charlotte County. We can just zip right into DeSoto County. It's right up the river and just a few minutes, and it's a gorgeous river. I go up there to sightsee as much as fish. And awesome place, and like the Navigator. It's in DeSoto County.
Right.
You can put in at the Navigator, go out, catch your snook, and put your boat back on the trailer at the Navigator, come back into town. Perfectly legal once snook is open in March.
Right. In March 1st.
March 1st, yeah.
Right.
Because it's closed January and February, then open March and April. And then closes again May and June and July and August.
Right.
Now we're going to see. May is when we find out if and when we can keep fish in Charlotte County. And in other words, snook, redfish, and trout. Meantime, there's 24 other species you can catch that are actually worth eating.
Yeah, it was funny. Yesterday somebody made the comment about, well, you can't keep any fish right now to eat. And I looked at them and I said, you know, you got at least a dozen that I can think of really, really quickly off the top of my head that you can keep to eat. Never right. mind sitting and really thinking about it. You know, it's just kind of mind-boggling that you've got these three species that have such high prestige for some reason or set up on a high pedestal of those are the only table fish that we have here. You know, and
I think I did the list the other day. We got black drum, jack crevel, which are very edible fish everywhere in the world except Florida. Mm-hmm. And that's because of rumor, myth, and legend. But it's an actually edible fish. We got bluefish, blue crabs you can catch and eat. You can keep one claw off a stone crab. You've got, let's say, bonefish every once in a while here, but they're not edible. You can eat the catfish, but I don't know, as long as there's still a burger joint open. Now, the only time I'm going to eat catfish is if we go to somebody's house who's having a house party and they want to fish out back and catch a fish dinner and then, you know, take it in and cook it, catch it, you know, the whole bit right there on the property.
Right.
I fillet just the tail part. You don't skin a saltwater catfish. I fillet just the tail, hardhead or sail cat. And from the ribs back, just the tail section, I take my knife, I go down right after the ribs, go back over, flip that, cut the meat off, the skin off of the meat, and then I cube it up. Now, I take Aunt Jemima Instant Pancake or Waffle or whatever brand you like. That's just one that happened to pop in my head. And then I take like an Ice House beer or Samuel Adams and use that in place of the water. And when I mix that up, it becomes an amazing beer bladder. Now, the trick to it is, when you get your fillet in, you wash it off, make sure you take paper towels or cloth towels or something and dry that fillet off as much as possible. Once it's dry, the batter will stick to the fish. Now, this is the same for walleye, largemouth bass, snook, redfish, trout. If you're going to do a beer batter mix on a fish, you got to dry the fillet as much as possible. Now, the next thing I do is cut
why,
it in.
Why do you have to dry it so thoroughly?
Because if you've got the natural oils on the fillet or the liquid, mm-hmm. The batter won't stick to the fish. You okay. get a lot of batter floating in the oil, but not much on the fish.
Okay, that makes sense because I honestly had no clue why. You know, yeah. But that makes sense because the few times that I have fried fish, it seems like the ones that sat there on the paper towels, I rinsed them all off and stuff. Those seem to be a little thicker, and I could never really understand why the breading seemed a little thicker on some fillets and not on others.
Oh, and it's true with breading. It's true with batter. It's true with almost anything. If you're going to, put something on the fish that you want to stay and stick on the fish, the more you dry it off, the more sticky it gets.
Okay, that makes sense.
So then the next thing I do, if I'm going to deep fry it with this beer batter coating on it from the pancake or waffle mix with beer instead of water, and I use the instant stuff. I'm not going to go through all that. Turns out about the same. Is I cube it up. I don't want these big chunks floating around in there. It takes longer to cook it. So I'm going to cut it an inch, maybe a little bigger than inch squares. I just take my knife and slice it into kind of cubes. That way the thin pieces, you know, and it's about when the batter's brown, nice golden brown, I want to be able to take them out and know the fish is cooked.
Right.
So I don't want anything too thick in there. I don't want to have to, you know, where it cooks and it's not cooked in the middle. I'm a troglodyte. My family, you know, my ancestors invented fire. We have a long history of cooking our food. I mean, we're going back a half a million years now. My family's been cooking food. So I don't do the sushi bit. I don't like raw food. You know, once you put them in the cubes, and as soon as the batter's done, it's nice golden brown, you're good to eat.
Right, and that...
It's amazing in walleye, too, by the way. If you're up north or yellow perch or any of them, it's an excellent recipe for that.
Well, and some people get messed up with catfish because they do dry out fairly easily in doing your batter rather than a breading. And as it cooks in that fry oil or whatever
whatever. If you cook it in oil, it tends, like just putting it on the grill, catfish gets real dry.
Right.
The cooking just, it's sucks a very all the coarse meat, out. And it just sucks the moisture out of it.
Right. That batter tends to kind of encapsulate it and almost steams it inside of the
batter.
Well,
the oil does too, you know, because you're putting it in liquid to cook it.
Right.
So that's a real benefit when it comes to catfish. But now we've also got cobia, which cobia should be showing up pretty good numbers any time now.
They should be with the water temperature, but I'm just not hearing the reports on them yet.
I think that's what's killing me about it.
Oh, this water temp is so... I mean, basically we've got, what, late April, early May fishing conditions as far as water temperature goes.
But the fish don't seem to know it.
No. And usually it's... You know, it's water temperature, food, and daytime, how many hours are in the day. Those three factors usually play a huge role in where the fish are at, what they're feeding on, the whole nine yards. And we've got the water temperature. We've got the food. The only thing we don't have is the sun, you know, the, yeah.
The photo.
Photo period. Yes, that's the right word.
The sun's very short during this time.
Shorter days, you know, but that's the only factor that's playing something weird in here to make the fishing so...
We should have a lot of cobia. By every marker I know of,
absolutely.
We should be inundated with cobia, and it's just not.
Right.
But hopefully we'll keep up on that. We don't have as many eels as we did a few years ago.
No.
A lot less people breaking off. I don't know what... happened to the eel population, but there's still a few, so it's possible you could catch and cook an eel. I'm not going to do it. I don't care what you do. I'm going to have to be naked and afraid, you know, starving for 2 weeks, you know, with ticks running up my butt crack in order for me to eat an eel. I'm sorry. That's the only way it's going to work.
Nice.
You know, or unless Bernie gets president. So, flounder. We've got some nice flounder around the area down by Cape Hayes. There's a little bit of flounder over off of the east side of the harbor.
Okay.
What if you were going to go for flounder right now, the big question people who don't know about flounder is how do you clean it? You can't fillet it like a normal fish.
No.
And the easiest way to do it is when you're looking at a flounder and it's laying down, you'll see the head there and then the length of the body, let's say going left to right. Head on the left, tail on the right. On the left side where the head is, make a cross cut down. Just take your knife and go down to your feel bone, cutting. You don't want to cut all the way through. You just want to cut through the skin, through the meat, until you touch bone. Stop cutting and then make that slice all the way across. Now you're going to do the same thing from his gill, the point of the gill, and you'll see kind of a recessed area all the way along the length of the fish. Cut through the skin and the meat, stop when you hit the bone, and just make a slice all the way down to the tail. Now, the key to understanding this is you're going to get 4 fillets from a flounder, 2 from each side. What we've effectively done is cut a T on the flounder, across that by the head, but you know, between the head and the rest of the meat, and then all the way down the middle, running lengthways. Then you're going to lift up a piece of that and take your knife, and as you lift up, just kind of let your knife ride along the ribs and everything until you peel that chunk of meat off. Now, once you have that off, you put it upside down, skin down, take your knife, cut the meat off the skin, and now you've got one fillet. You do that 4 times. But you cannot just take your knife and just run through and get a fillet out of it. You will have no meat. You'll destroy everything. This has got to be done by shaving it off, so to speak. You run your knife along while you lift up on the fillet, and you just keep working it off. Kind of like if you had a sticker stuck to your window on your car.
There you go. That's a perfect way to describe that.
You know, you're trying to get that stupid thing to peel off, and if you take a razor blade and keep pushing along up on it, it will just keep little by little coming up. And that's the way you do a flounder. And they're great eating. Now, where would you say you could go catch flounder right now? Middle Beach?
Yeah, maybe.
Venice,
probably. I mean, honestly, I can't think of too many places from shore.
I have to tell you, boys and girls, he's got a distressed look on his face. He's all puckered up. He's like, you had to ask me this. Like, I'm going to. You don't have to know, Robert. Well, you say no. There's no place to go.
Well, the reality is that we just don't have the big flounder fishery that we had like several years ago when it was just starting to get really good. It all of a sudden kind of petered out again. So it seems like it's more of an incidental bycatch, but the only place I've ever caught them with any relative numbers has usually been from a boat, and it's been on the edge of either Boca Grande Pass or Gasparilla Pass, fishing now, those little drop-offs.
I'm going to go along with that, except if you go down to the state park right at Boca Grande Pass and walk around to the phosphate dock, or even if you get past that, I don't even know if you can get that far anymore.
Not anymore without wading.
So those areas, especially from the phosphate dock back north up till the next few docks, historically great place for a flounder. Now, the other place is where there used to be the rock wall out in the front.
Mm-hmm.
Just out in front of that, we've caught a lot of flounder there over the years.
Yeah, and I have too, but just not consistent enough to get wound up about it. But if I was going to try it, it would probably be right there around Quarantine Rocks on the backside of Cayo Costa.
Yeah, that's a good spot.
Or out by Johnson Shoals, but on the south side of Johnson Shoals where it drops off a little bit more drastically.
Now, that's where three world record flounder have been caught.
Really?
Yeah, right over there by Johnson Shoals where you're talking about, right by the drop-offs.
I had no idea about that. That's pretty cool.
And it was Ralph Allen, Alan Ogle, and Alan Rubin. All three of them guys, I think Ralph Allen holds the record right now. But Alan Rubin had it. Alan Ogle from the old Bill's Tackle, he had it for a while. And I think Alan Ogle. But all three of them had Allens. That's what made it so confusing. The last three record holders, I think, were all Allens.
Well, and Alan Ogle and Ralph Allen used to fish together a lot, too. So that's even more interesting.
Now, Goliath grouper, the best eating fish in the harbor, you're not allowed to take.
Right.
It would be awesome to be able to take some of those best eating fish anywhere, in my humble opinion. But gag grouper, there are gag grouper in the harbor right now. We've got some up in what, Lemon Bay?
A little bit, yeah. Except for season is closed on them.
Season's closed on them. And they have to be, I think,
24 inches now.
24 inches. But Placida Pass, Captiva Pass, or Gasparilla Pass and Captiva Pass are the two best passes to find keeper Goliath grouper. Or gag grouper. You can't keep any Goliath, no. But out in the Gulf, they're actually catching quite a few of them right now because season's closed. It's like a deer. You'll see 1,000 deer the night before season opens, and the next morning, poof, gone.
They definitely know, even though they don't have calendars under the water that we're aware of, but they seem to know.
You know, I think a lot of it has to do with that first shot in the morning, that first gunshot. They went, oh, that time again? Everybody hide.
Yeah. Well, I can believe that. That makes sense.
Red grouper.
Red grouper, yes. Yeah, red grouper, 20-inch minimum.
Really never going to find those
near shore.
Yeah, in less than 30 feet of water. It's rare, not never, but super improbable.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. It's going to be realistic numbers size-wise to catch legal ones. You're looking at that 80 to 110 feet of water right now for them. And the guys are doing pretty well on them. I had a gentleman earlier today that we were talking about his offshore adventure because there's been actually a couple of calm days this past week where several different people got out. He got one that was 26 inches. His buddy got one that was 29 inches. They only caught the two legal size, but they were pretty big as far as I'm concerned for a red
nice
grouper.
Size fish.
Yeah.
That's about 2.5-inch fillets thick.
Oh, yeah. Yeah,
thick.
Definitely.
2.5 inches thick. All right. But grunts. A lot of grunts around, but not as many as what we had a while ago, but still decent numbers on all the inshore reefs.
Mm-hmm.
But we did for a while have some at Ponce de Leon Park, but it's pretty uncommon nowadays.
Right. You know, and I think, you know, I was talking to another gentleman yesterday who was offshore fishing, and he was talking to me about the lanes and the grunts and some of the porgies, because some of his usual spots were not producing this year. But some of the other areas that he hasn't fished in years were doing a little bit better. And when we had that red tide event, was it a year and a half ago, 2 years ago, that was pretty bad? What happened was is that red tide became so abundant with some of the die-off, it created another bacteria slash algae in the water called black tide, basically. And what happened was that overpowered the red tide and created a hypoxic scenario. The red tide didn't kill all the bottom of the Gulf out there the way all these people were photographing, you know, all this.
That was one of the big problems that I had was black diatom algae, or what we simply call black tide, was far more deadly than the red tide.
Yeah.
But it got no publicity.
None.
Nobody wants to look into this or understand what happens. Red tide is nowhere near as bad because red tide floats at the surface.
Right.
The black diatom algae, or black tide, goes down deep, surface to bottom, and just literally sucks the oxygen out of the water. So everything suffocates.
Yeah. I mean, and it's smothered.
You can't live without oxygen.
No, but I mean, it was so strong and so prevalent because there's a lot of areas that go hypoxic naturally because of the sulfate gases and decomposition of materials in the river, lakes, everywhere. That just is a normal occurrence. But this was growing at such an alarming rate, it was sucking all the oxygen out of the water, and it killed the sea fans, the soft corals, all your crabs and snails.
That's why the stone crab traps were so far offshore last fall.
Right, and they still are in a lot of spots.
Because there was just nothing for the stone crab to eat anymore in close. So they weren't coming up close. There was nothing but, you know, picked over carcasses because by that time everybody had been long dead and had been long eaten.
Right.
And so they had moved the stone crab traps out 2, 3, 4 miles further than normal, not because of the red tide. Red tide does not kill crabs or shrimp.
Right.
It just doesn't. It doesn't kill clams and oysters either.
Right.
So anyway, a fish that is edible, but I am not going to eat because you got to literally fillet them out and then take like a spoon and rub the meat off of the skin, is a ladyfish.
Yeah, I'm
not
messing
with that. You get to kind of spoon the meat off into a paste, and then you can cook it up. And by all accounts, fairly tasty. But if I have to make a fillet and then take a spoon and rub the meat out from the bones and off, no, I'm sorry. I'm not that hungry. Wendy's is right up the street. They got an awesome junior bacon cheeseburger. You know, not going to happen. Okay, lizard fish.
Yeah, I'm not eating it.
Yeah, I can't. I got to say, I know they're edible, but you could eat it if you want to.
Sure.
But cool to catch. Not a big fight, but boy, you bring them up, and if you've got people from up north and you have a fish with kind of a weird body and the head of a lizard or snake or something?
They almost look like kind of the head almost semi reminds me of some of the mythical dragons slash sea monsters that you see on like really old charts from like the Columbus days. And stuff
right.
like that. They have that really elongated pointed nose, flat head, and a lot of little teeth.
The teeth is kind of flat but triangle shaped from the mouth back to the back of the head. It's kind of triangle shaped. And you've just got row of teeth that line those jaws, you know, perfectly on the triangle part. And it's just, it's crazy to look at. King mackerel, and king mackerel is a very good eating fish, very seldom caught on from land or beach. Not impossible, but improbable you would.
Right.
But right now they're going nuts out in the Gulf.
Yeah, I've had several people see them.
Excellent eating fish too, by the way.
They were catching them wild because, I mean, anyone who goes offshore fishing that really does it well always has at least one or two poles free lined out the back of the boat with either a frozen sardine just flat lined right out the back of the boat, no weight, no nothing, just letting it drift in the current naturally, or using some kind of live bait fish under a little bobber and just letting it stay out there.
But now, if I'm doing king mackerel, I'm going to be anywhere from 6 to 20 feet below a bobber, depending on the day and the situations.
Right. But in general, these guys are just free lining baits in hopes of what might come by, because you never know.
No, I get that. But I'm just saying, for me, I'll put a king mackerel bait, say a blue runner or pinfish or whatever it might be, a thread fin. Mm-hmm. And I'm usually going 6 feet down to all the way down to 25 feet. And all I simply do is take the bobber off before I reel it in. You just pull the two little pegs out, take it off the line, and then finish reeling it in. It doesn't hurt anything, but you obviously cannot cast that much line.
Right.
So what I'm doing is picking a rod holder. I'm going to have that in, putting it out behind the boat, just leaving the bail open or the conventional reel disengaged, and I just pull some line out until I get it back where I want it, and then close the bail or engage the conventional reel at a very modest drag. I don't want much drag on it at all, because these fish will hit at 30 miles an hour. If your drag is locked down like you're going to fight the fish,
yeah,
you're going to lose the fish. You're either going to rip his jaw apart pulling the hook out, or it's going to break something. Break the reel, the rod, the line, something's going to give. Back the drag down. That's where a lever drag is so nice, because you can take that lever, preset it to where you want to fight the fish, and then back it down to where you want the fish to hit it. And then when the fish takes off with it, you simply pick the rod up, push the lever forward to where you want it, boom, you're fighting the fish. Or a dual drag live liner reel, or bait feeder, bait runner, whatever you want to call them, dual drags, where you can set the back drag waiting for the fish to bite and have just a little bit of tension on it. And then when the fish takes off, you simply turn the handle, automatically kicks it into fighting the fish, and now it's on like Donkey Kong.
See, and that's my most favorite reel to use when putting a bait out the back of the boat. I really like those live liner / dual drag reels for that.
I don't have any big reels now that are not live liner bait runners. If I'm bottom fishing with it and I'm holding it, I just put up with the extra few ounces. But every time I go to set it down, I can just flick that lever, and I don't have to worry about it being stuck in the rod holder with the rod all bent over. I don't have to mess with my drag. I can leave it set perfect. I don't have to open the bail. All these things are problems. Yeah. I just flip the lever. Let's say I'm going to, you know, take a sandwich break or, you know, take a leak or something, you know. I don't want to be holding the darn rod. I put it in the rod holder, flick the lever, good. Go over, goes off, just pick it up, start reeling, I'm good.
Yeah, they're pretty
amazing. How far out are the king mackerel?
Most of the couple guys that did catch them and also see them free jumping were out there at about 25 to 30 miles.
So
a couple guys saw a couple free jumpers at 20 miles, but the majority of them were out there with the guys group
fishing.
All right,
so you're saying 20 to 30. So let's say best bet 25 miles.
Mm-hmm.
So you get out about 25 miles. Are you anchoring or drifting?
These guys were anchored up.
All right. Now, I'd like to find a good grouper spot where I want to catch snapper, grouper, something like that, anchor up, put my king mackerel lines out, because I'm just as likely to get hit there or more likely than some random spot in the middle of nowhere.
Right.
So, and I love watching king skyrocket. They call it skyrocketing or free jumping or whatever you want to call it. But for no apparent reason at all, these fish launch themselves, what, 6, 8, 10 feet up in the air?
Oh, easily.
People have actually been injured because they're going along in a boat and a king mackerel jumps up, and it just, that one in a billion shot, it's jumped in front of the boat and it goes forward and you get hit.
Right. Yeah, it comes in the boat. It's cool to witness, you know, and I've never gotten to see it up close, you know, not like where I'm scared dangerously up close, but I've never gotten to see it up close enough to where it was just amazing. But the videos and some of the photographs that I've seen from people over the years that have been out in areas when the kings come through in great numbers and can dedicate some time to it, it's been pretty cool. But a lot of times when they are jumping, they, I would say about 50% of the time that I'm aware of, is they are usually feeding because they're a predator of basically they're a slash and cut. And what they do is they try to swim through to the bait fish and they bite basically their motor off. They like to bite that tail section off of a bait fish. And then they swing back around and come and finish that immobilized bait fish and finish eating it. But with so many bait fish close to the surface, and those fish are always suspended 6 to 30 feet down below the surface, they're racing to the top. And like you said, at 30 miles an hour, where's a torpedo go when it's going straight up? You know, you if that bait fish is a foot or two below the surface, I don't think he has enough. I think he's got too much momentum to stop. So he just bites, goes through the air, comes back down, and then starts looking for what he just bit off.
All right. Spanish mackerel. And we were talking about it in the truck on the way up here. I got to get over to Murdoch Tire and get my front tire went flat in. Now, I will give the Michelin. Jim put those. I didn't think it was worth the money. God awesome, great tire. Because we rode all the way up here with, what, a quarter-inch bolt sticking out of my tire?
Oh, yeah. It's a good one.
Yeah. So, you know, I got an air compressor and all that in the truck. But we're going to head over to Murdoch Tire. But just what's really weird about this is mackerel. We're talking about that in the truck. And how is it that the mackerel are north of us?
It makes no sense. I mean, we should be loaded with Spanish mackerel down in our area, even down below Fort Myers.
Do you know of any from, let's say, Placida, Gasparilla Pass, south?
None.
How far north do you got to go to find the Spanish?
Venice.
So from Venice north, we've got good fishing for Spanish mackerel.
Yeah, I mean, all the way up to Tampa Bay. You know, and Spanish mackerel are, like you said earlier, it's a warmer water fish. You know, they usually like that warmer water.
By all accounts, they should be from us south, not north of us.
Right, and we've got all the food out there, water temperature's right. I mean, you know, once again, same thing. You know, the only thing that's not right is a photo period, but how are they getting better fish north of us? I'd get it if it was south. But being that they're north of us is really pretty bizarre. And these are fishable numbers because there's been a couple guys saying, oh, I got one in the harbor, I got two out by Boca Grande. But it's so inconsistent that it's not worth mentioning, like even in fishing reports, because it's just too scattered and too few.
All right. One of my favorite eating fish is a mullet.
Okay.
Now, this is not a catch-and-release fish. Mullet do not kill for a living, so people think they're vegetarians. It's not true. They'll eat worms. They'll eat pieces of fish. They'll eat pieces of shrimp. They'll eat algae. They'll eat literally anything. They have the most varied diet of almost any fish you'll ever see. But one of the big problems is, because most fish won't eat algae. They love going down and sucking algae off of rocks and eating algae as it's drifting through the water, which most fish won't do. And they'll eat peeled shrimp meat. They will eat peeled soft fish meat. They eat almost anything. Worms, they catch a lot of them on worms. The problem is they don't kill for a living. That's where people get confused. So they're not going to look and go, oh, wow, that's food over there, and they're going to run over and get it. They just simply swim along, opening and closing their mouth. If they get in an area with a lot of stuff like algae, you ever notice how when red tide hits that there's a lot of dead mullet? First thing you notice. Well, what is red tide? An algae, right?
Yeah.
Of form, you know, sure. Yes, it's whatever. But isn't it just an algae at heart?
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, so you got all these blobs of algae floating through the water, and what do mullet love to eat? What's one of their favorite foods? Now, they'll eat anything, but algae's probably close to the top of the list.
Yeah, algae's, macroalgae's, microalgae's, they eat all that stuff.
So that's right on the top of their list. So they can just go along swimming, eating mouthfuls of this stuff. What happens when a fish gets in red tide?
It dies.
Okay. So now you got a bunch of mullets swimming in there trying to eat this all this algae on the red tide. They die. As soon as they start to die, what fish loves dead fish more than anything?
Catfish.
Catfish. So when you have a little red tide outburst, you'll know it was actually red tide, not commercial fishing or this or that or the next thing, if the two predominant species you see is mullet and catfish. The mullet run in to eat the algae, my opinion, and then the catfish run in to eat the dead mullet.
Yeah. No, so, it's just the whole circle of life there.
No, that's the whole... There is a broken circle in there somewhere.
Darwin's theory at its finest.
They are about as smart as the rocks come in. You know, if you get a bag of rocks and a mullet, they're about the same on the intelligence level here. Oh, gee, look, there's food. It'll kill me, but I can get it. I can eat. Jiminy crickets. It's like I say about a lot of the people in this country right now. Let's say the end of civilization comes, zombie apocalypse, whatever. They would starve to death sitting on a fence line between a herd of cattle and a field of wheat.
No, that's true.
They wouldn't know what to do with either one of them, you know? They'd be petting the cows and, you know, I don't know, wiping their butt with the wheat. I don't think they'd know what to do with it. But mullet, they're not a catch-and-release species. They won't go after something to hit it. They don't chase down their food. They will get it if it's in front of them. If not, they're not going to veer off 20 feet and go eat it. But you can take a treble hook and snag them. Or you can catch them with a cast net. Now, I think snagging or snatching mullet, I guess the locals call it snatching, is really not only challenging, but pretty... If you're looking for a meal, this is... way to, you know, kind of add to it. But this is, you're killing this fish, you know, which you're going to do if you're going to eat it anyway. But you take a treble hook, and if you've ever been duck hunting, you never shoot at the duck. Because by the time your bullet gets there, or your shot gets there, it's already gone. So you have to lead in front of it. So you see a mullet jump, and you take this treble hook, and you cast in front of it, trying to reel it in, and as soon as you feel it bump something, you really got to set the hook. So no light action rods, because you need a stiff action. Doesn't have to be a heavy rod, but not a light action. Not very much bend to that rod. You want real tight, because once it touches the side of that mullet, that point's got to go through the scales and into the fish. Most of the time, it'll bounce off. So you really got to put some hook into it. And now... you've got a fish that fights every bit as hard as a snook, if not harder, and you've not hooked him in the mouth so you can control it. You've hooked him maybe behind the head, maybe in the body, maybe by the tail, and let me tell you, the fight is on. This is crazy fighting.
Well, and how were they when you caught them on hook and line? Because you've caught several.
Oh, I've caught.
On lures and bait.
Oh, yeah,
I've caught them on all kinds of stuff. I have personally yet to, but
they're an amazing fight. I literally thought I actually caught one on a jitterbug that one night, and I know I caught it, and he bit it. Why, I don't know. But his lower lip had one part of the treble hook, and the upper lip had the other point to the treble hook. Obviously, he'd get it. I think maybe I annoyed him. It was a very small area I was fishing, and I just kept repetitively throwing it over because I'd see fish working, but it was so dark I couldn't see what it was. I thought I had a huge snook on, and it turned out it was, what, a 16-inch mullet. And I thought it was like a 30-inch snook. But flay them out. Now, what we usually do is when we catch them, I put my thumb behind their head, 2-3 fingers underneath the jaw, pull back, and it pops that little open, gets a couple drops of blood out. Not now. The other way I prefer to do it is I like having an ice chest if I'm going to go snag a mullet, and I want to put water and ice in it. And I take the mullet off the snatch hook and throw them into the ice chest. I want them to die of hypothermia, which is very nice because you just go to sleep, and it pulls all the blood and everything out of the meat. So what I want to do then is fillet them out and then cut out anything in that meat that has red on it. No red on that fillet. I normal fillet, down, back, flip it over, cut the meat off the skin, and then I slice that fillet into two separate parts so that there is no red. And amazing, awesome eating fish. And it's legal to do, and it's actually, I hate to say it without sounding like, you know, troglodyte, I want to go kill something, but it's a challenge.
Yeah.
Look at that. RJ's here.
I'm actually going to sit at the big boys' table.
You're going to sit over here with us? Wow. All right. Pompano. This is another very edible fish people absolutely love. Any place we can go from land right now on a beach and catch some pompano?
I have not heard of any pompano in probably 10 days or better. From Tampa down to Fort Myers Beach, it's been very, very, pretty much no okay. reports.
It's a great eating fish you could eat, and usually you can go out along Middle Beach, Venice, Gasparilla Island, Captiva, and you have a chance of a pompano. Right now, not a good chance.
Right. And that's not to say that they couldn't show up at any given moment, but just no reports to speak of, so I don't want to mislead anybody. But if you're already out at one of the beaches or near one of the passes, I'm throwing out pompano jigs, hoping and praying that one might come by.
Give it a shot anyway. RJ, not only are you the, you know, producer, co-host and all this, and manager of the radio station, you're also an attorney as a physician's advocate?
Yes.
Is that what you were doing?
Yes, I was doing patient advocate stuff.
So you were out helping sick people, so we have to forgive you for this.
One time only, yeah, forgive me.
Okay. Now, can people choose their own physician's advocate?
Yes, they can. Unlike, you know, doctor programs and things like that where you get stuck with whoever's in the network, you don't have to be in any network to use a patient advocate.
So they can call you and say, hey, I'm sick, I'm having problems,
yeah,
can you help?
If they're having trouble getting through the medical system, I'm the one to talk to. Because yeah. I can put the brakes on things if they're going the wrong way. I can get additional evaluations done, that sort of thing.
This is a very good thing to know, boys and girls. Not only is RJ one of my best friends, we're in business together and do all that, and he's helped me. Because, believe it or not, he's like a real attorney and everything. Just, I mean, you didn't get it out of the Cracker Jack box. I know that. You actually went to school and had to earn these degrees, right?
Yeah, I'm still in therapy over it.
Yeah. Speaking of therapy, the commercial fishermen are losing their mind because there's no commercial fish out there hardly. But sandbream all of a sudden went nuts, and I know three commercial guys out there hitting the sandbream right now.
Yeah.
Yeah. What are they using sandbream for?
They eat them.
They eat them.
They're
it's
absolutely
one of
amazing.
The best tasting saltwater fish in the world.
Wow.
Period.
It's like a saltwater crappie slash saltwater walleye.
So they're white. No, it's way better than walleye. Walleye ain't even close.
And they're more deeper water fish?
No, they're very shallow. You can catch them. One of my favorite places to catch them was on 776 between Elgin Beach and Port Charlotte. You know, they have those flat bridges there. Nobody even notices them.
Yeah,
there's
yeah.
culverts going under. When you get a good high tide and then that tide's falling, right at the end of those culverts where the water drops out, there's little pools there, and it's full of sandbream.
And they're hitting on?
Shrimp.
Pieces of shrimp.
Pieces of shrimp.
Peeled shrimp meat.
Yeah, they got a little tiny mouth. Real thin paper-like, similar to a crappie, except for the mouth actually pulls out and down because they like to get in. They like actually more brackish than they do salt water. They like a little bit of fresh mixed in with it for them to be content. But this year's been really weird because they're catching them in a lot of the Port Charlotte canals and the Punta Gorda Isles canals.
This is one of the first years we've ever heard of them in the PGI canals.
Yeah,
very seldom, if ever. Port Charlotte's been inundated with them. The further you go back into the wild canals, the back end of the canals, you catch a lot of sandbream. Tippy Canoe and back and way back of Tippy Canoe in the creeks, a lot of sandbream. PGI historically has had too much salt in it.
Right.
And not now, though. Oh, my God.
And
Alligator Creek, there used to be a lot of them in Alligator Creek.
Yeah, and there shouldn't be that many this time of year, though. Usually,
but they're usually up by 41, up by the trestle, going up towards the what's that dam up there?
Shell Creek.
No,
what are you talking about?
Alligator Creek goes up.
Oh, okay.
I forget the name of the dam up there, but anyway, it's on the website. There's a dam there you can go to. It road starts with a T or something. Robert, any edible sharks here right now that you can catch?
Black tips.
So you got black tips. Any bonnets?
I haven't heard much about bonnets. There have been a couple of bonnet heads out along the beaches where the guys are fishing for mostly for the black tips, but I have not heard of any bonnet heads on the, you know, because usually they're right now, they're usually good numbers on the Cape Hayes Bar and down by Pirate Harbor and Burnt Store, but this year they seem to have done a little bit of a vanishing act. It's a little strange.
So still a lot of black tips, but mostly along the Gulf Coast. So if you get out around Gasparilla Island, Captiva, Sanibel, Venice, Englewood, cast the line out with half a sardine on it, you got a better than even shot of catching a black tip.
Yeah.
Now, very edible. It's one of my favorite eating fish.
The main thing is right now, this time of year, there is a 50-50 shot of a spinner shark.
So any visible, easy-to-tell difference?
there is, but it's not 100% guaranteed.
Now,
pardon me.
Does the spinner, all the fins on it black or no black?
Most of the time they're all black, versus the black tip is not all black.
The black tip's anal fin is usually white.
Correct.
So if you catch a shark with black tips everywhere except the ones by his anal opening, if they're white, that's a black tip. But if they've got black marks on them, put it back.
Absolutely.
That's the easiest way to tell. You know, check out his butt.
Yeah. And, you know, the spinner shark is, what, 56 inches? 54 inches.
Something like that. But
So it's actually got a size limit on it versus the black tip does not. So you don't want to get a ticket for harvesting the wrong fish.
RJ, I'm going to drop in on your attorney brain for a little bit here. What do you think DeSoto County, they just made it's a sanctuary gun county. So your guns are under sanctuary protection in DeSoto County. Did you hear about that?
No, I didn't. I'm not
quite sure
what that means.
You know how they have sanctuaries for alien, you know, illegal.
Oh, so you can't take away guns from people in a sanctuary county?
Basically, well, they're not going to follow any state or federal laws that might be passed that could jeopardize their Second Amendment right.
So they've decided that DeSoto County is a gun sanctuary county.
So if we outlaw...
Somebody want to make me an offer in my house, I'm moving to DeSoto.
Right.
So basically they're saying if they outlaw certain size magazines and things
guns,
like that...
Guns, anything.
They're not going to follow that.
No, right. They are...
I'd be curious to see how that would play out.
Like three other counties in the state have already done it. Mm-hmm. Pope County is one of them, and I forget what the other one is. But... you know, basically they're saying that you're not going to mess with our Second Amendment right, you know, is what it boils down to. I'm sure that there's little weird clauses where the magazines and all that garbage.
If they can give driver's license to people who don't actually live here, if they can protect them against everything else, why can't we protect guns the same way?
It's an interesting concept.
Interesting concept. But you're like me.
I have no idea.
I think if they get to the point where they're going around collecting guns like they're doing up Virginia.
Mm-hmm. We'll all go pitch tents in Hardy County.
Well, I don't think any law in the book is going to protect you from these people. They're out and out. Mangrove snapper. The only snapper, highly edible, wonderful prized-eating fish. The only one you will ever catch inside of Charlotte Harbor. Now, you might every once in a blue moon catch a lane snapper there, but there are no red snappers in the Intercoastal or Charlotte Harbor, none in Sarasota Bay. These are mangrove snappers with the occasional, highly improbable lane snapper. But mangrove snappers have a bright red belly, black stripe by their eye, dark across the back when they're inland, completely gray in the Gulf of Mexico. But wonderful eating fish that's readily caught from shore. What's your best bets, Robert?
Well, for people from up north, the ones that are in the harbor and in the rivers, they actually look very similar to a smallmouth bass. They have that same similar
with
coloration.
With the teeth of a cat.
Yes. Yes, with the teeth of a cat.
If you picture a smallmouth bass with the same teeth as a house cat.
Right.
That would be it.
Yeah. Okay. It's just the easiest way to describe it because people think, oh, it's red. No, it looks like a smallmouth bass. That's a mangrove snapper.
And wonderful. Just fillet them out, normal fillet, nothing special about it, you know. They're actually really good eating fish.
Yeah. They're catching quite a few of them in Ponce de Leon again, which I finally got a couple reports these past couple of days, down around the Placida Trestle, and also at El Jobin. And probably the best bait, honestly, is the silver sides. Those frozen silver sides are producing the bigger ones. Guys that are throwing shrimp are catching a lot of those little 6 to 8, 9 inches. But if you want something that's legal size, which is 10 inches and up, I would try the silver sides, or if you can catch yourself a silver dollar size pinfish.
All right. Let's see. Spade fish. The only place I know that catch them from land is over at Ponce, and they're not there right now. They should be there, but they're not there.
Nope.
But one you can catch from shore, as weird as it is. Now, this is where if you have an old surf rod, a 9, 10, 12-foot rod, put some light line on it, go out to the barrier islands, Gasparilla Island, Venice, whatever, and put 1.5 ounces of lead on it, zip it, cast out with a shrimp on, let it hit on the bottom, and get squirrel fish. They're actually hitting squirrel fish in 10, 15 feet of water. I didn't even know that you could do that.
They're actually catching them in closer than that.
Yeah,
right. I mean, there at the old broken down pier there at Boca Grande, your flounder spot, they're catching them right there 20, 30 feet off the beach.
So you can cast to these and catch squirrel fish. It is fastly becoming one of the favorite fish out of the Gulf. They were always just for bait, and now they're for the table.
Absolutely. And people scoff at that because they're like, what are you going to do with that thing? Well, those are the same people that fish for yellow perch up in Lake Erie.
And it's the same as a yellow perch. I mean, edibility-wise, I'm going to give it 6 and 1/2 dozen the other.
And it's the same size, if not a little bit bigger.
Yeah.
You know, it's pretty hilarious.
So he doesn't play the music. So
I'll go help Joe with the music.
Okay, you help Joe with the music. That'll be awesome because we're just about out of time. Robert, any final remark?
Yeah, take advantage of the beautiful weather, and if there's calm weather offshore, only a few guys have gotten out, but they did incredible. So if you've got the capabilities to run offshore and take advantage of it.
Anything, RJ? Got any thoughts?
You know, I've gone to the dark side, and I have a kayak now, and I'm planning on going out this weekend on a Mayaka.
All right, so we're going to hear a fishing report from you next week. Me, my office is full of paperwork. That's all I can tell you. Hopefully this new system is going to get us out of that. Anyway, Fish and Frank here. Joe in the temporary leadership command. You've been cooed, though. RJ's back in the throne of tower power. Robert over there across from me. Fish and Frank here. Who knows what's going on? I give up. We're out of here for this week. Thank you, boys and girls, for listening. Bye. Yeah.